a death in the Hudson, sex trafficking on the internet, embryonic stem cell research is back on, another look at this weekend's rally on the Mall, and folks who go green feel guilt. It's Friday, October 1, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The story out of Rutgers University is heartbreaking. An 18-year-old young man, freshman Tyler Clementi, committed suicide by jumping off of the George Washington Bridge and into the Hudson River. The background story to this is convoluted and now very controversial. It seems that Mr. Clementi was shown in a romantic encounter with another young man as his own roommate set up his webcam and laptop in order to serve as a remote camera to invite others to watch in a voyeuristic enterprise as Mr. Clementi had this romantic encounter with another young student. What we see here is the intersection of new opportunities for mischief through digital media and the reality that this was a young man who was clearly in trouble. He should have been able to trust his roommate. But his roommate, it turns out, was a sexual predator of a very unique sort, one that preys by using digital media in order to serve as an exposer of another for what appears to be nothing more than a joke or entertainment. Mr. Clementi certainly didn't see it as a joke, nor as entertainment. He felt violated, he was embarrassed, humiliated, and tremendously confused. In postings he left on his Facebook site and on a homosexual internet site, he made clear that he was completely confused about how to handle this. He did not know how to respond to his roommate. He was humiliated by the exposure, and the one word that comes so clearly to mind when looking at this situation and this young man's postings, he was grieved, and also he was confused. Now, as Christians look to the story, we have to see so many dimensions. On the one hand, we see a young man who is symbolic of so many who are around us. How many people saw Tyler Clementi on the day that he committed suicide by that awful jump from the bridge and had any idea that this was a young man who was so deeply troubled, humiliated, embarrassed? He was clearly struggling with his sexual orientation. He did not know where to turn, and there was no safe place, at least that he seemed to know, that he could go. How many people saw Tyler Clementi on that day and had no idea? But how many people saw him that day and did know that he had been exposed, did know that he had been humiliated? Perhaps some of these young people had laughed at his expense or had enjoyed the voyeuristic experience of watching him in such an embarrassing context. People in such confusion are all around us. If anything, this particular cultural moment exposes even greater numbers of persons to this kind of confusion, turmoil, and grief. I would only hope that there could have been Christians around Mr. Clementi who would have responded with the love of Christ, telling him the truth as they had opportunity to tell him the truth, but making certain that he knew that he was loved and valued and that he could indeed find a way through even this kind of humiliation. 18 years of age, what a tender age, what a young man, what a tragedy. We can only grieve with his parents as they now have lost a son, and that they have done so under such embarrassing and horrifying circumstances. What we're looking at here is something that could only have happened in this digital age. All kinds of opportunity for new kinds of sexual predation, of embarrassment, and frankly, of attempted entertainment at someone else's expense. All kinds of digital mischief. Well, these are all now very easy. 18-year-olds know how to set up such cameras and control them remotely. They're adept at going to social media sites and inviting others to look in. What we see here is a young man who should have been able to trust his roommate, but instead his roommate turned out to be a sexual predator of a very dangerous sort. Parents should look at this as another signal of just how vigilant we must be in protecting our own children from dangers that, quite frankly, in generations past, we could not even have imagined. Christians know the truth about the sinfulness of homosexuality. But we also know the truth that it is not the unpardonable sin. We are the ones who know that Jesus came to save sinners, and that love of God and love of neighbor means that we should look out for the vulnerable like Tyler Clementi, and we should seek the opportunity to befriend them, to protect them, and to walk with them through the kind of confusion that led this young man to jump off of the George Washington Bridge. Regrettably, the secular conversation about this is going to be more tilted towards the theme of hate crimes, and already gay rights movements and organizations are coalescing in order to make this another symbolic case in the culture. However, this is not just about sexual orientation, as much as that may be central to the story. It's about the vulnerability of every single human being who, caught in the right circumstances, would find himself or herself in a situation that seems almost impossible to bear. Humiliation and embarrassment are difficult at any age, but for an 18-year-old young person, it can be almost breathtakingly horrifying. You just have to wonder how this story could have been different had there been just one person close to Tyler Clementi who would have befriended him and walked with him through this and loved him in spite of his exposure, his humiliation, and his confusion. Let's remember that that is what the Christian church is all about. Speaking of digital mischief, USA Today is out with yet another story about sex trafficking and the internet. Sex trafficking is as old as humanity. And as a matter of fact, the whole issue of prostitution, well, it's often referred to as the world's oldest profession. But the digital revolution has brought new opportunities, bulletin boards, websites, digital means of connecting those who are seeking prostitution with those who are offering it, or with those who are offering others through the process of what amounts to sexual slavery. The news coming out of USA Today has to do with the fact that there is an estimated 100,000 American children who are victimized each year. Organizations, including several actors and actresses and celebrities with public influence, are seeking to shut down internet sites that become basically the platforms for prostitution and sex trafficking. Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal said adult services sections are little more than online brothels, and yet many of these are popular, and some of them are associated with mainline corporations and media outlets that, frankly, would surprise many. What we're looking at here is big business. This year, the website Craigslist was on track to earn $44 million on adult services ads before, under public pressure, they shut down the service. Predictably, others are quite ready to take their place. One website, Backpage.com, is reported to have helped a pimp prostitute a 14-year-old girl. Now, we're talking about the wild, wild west of the new digital frontier. Every citizen should be concerned about this, but parents should be particularly concerned because the internet is anything but a safe place. There's no way, responsibly, to pull our children entirely out of this digital world. They are, after all, the generation of digital natives. This is the world they're going to grow up in. This is the world they're going to know. But parents should offer no apology whatsoever for supervising the internet activities of their children. I'll put it even stronger. Parents have an undeniable responsibility to protect their children from sexual predators and from others on the internet and elsewhere who would do them harm. And harm can be done long before it gets to sex trafficking, just in terms of the exposure to sexually explicit, violent, and pornographic materials. And the internet is actually a world filled with far more of those materials than parents might even imagine. It's a dangerous world out there. Protect your children and protect yourself. There's been a great deal of chatter about the rally on the Mall to be held by progressive forces on Saturday, something of an answer to the rally that was sponsored by Glenn Beck that pulled several hundred thousand persons to the Mall just a couple of weeks ago. This progressive group, as it styles itself, is a constellation of groups, organizations, and special interests from the left. One of the interesting things that I found in the USA Today coverage of this rally is the focus that it offered on one woman, Sabrina Greenwood, who intends to march on Saturday. I'm reading to you here from the USA Today report by Marisol Bello, and I quote, "Greenwood, age 38, says she's been paying more attention to economic issues since August when she was laid off after 5 years as a station agent with New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority. The single mother says she'll speak about her scramble to support herself and four children on her $400 a week unemployment check. She says she struggles to keep her 20-year-old daughter in college, her teenage son off the streets, and her two younger daughters in good schools. My story is not unique in any way, she says. What about the middle class? End quote. Well, one of the things you immediately note when you think about this story is what the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan pointed out time and again. There is no government program. There is no collection of government programs that can replace what is absent when the family is not intact. What is missing in this news story, as this woman, Ms. Greenwood, tells the story, is a husband, a father. Instead, this is a single mother with a large number of children, and even as I would honor her for doing her best to take care of her family, we just have to look at this and realize that there is no way the government can put back together what has fallen apart inside the family. The family structure is so basic that when it falls apart, when there is a marital failure, or for that matter, the loss of a spouse or a mother or a father by some kind of death or injury, there is irreparable harm. But when it is done as a matter of mere social pathology, well, that's another thing altogether. I guarantee you this. Those people who are going to be marching at this rally in Washington on Saturday will not be talking about family structure. They're going to be talking about how to put the world together on the other side of having taken it apart. Some news stories catch our attention because they're just so angular and interesting. That's the case in Joyce Wadler's article, a very large one in the home section of the New York Times on Thursday, entitled Green Guilt. Even the most committed say they commit environmental sins. Isn't it fascinating that in a time in which the word sin, the entire category of sin, has become almost useless, if not totally absent in the larger society, the only sin it turns out the New York Times wants to talk about is an environmental sin. Now, here's what makes this story really interesting. There's a great deal of honesty embedded in this. As Joyce Wadler reports, a good many of those who are even professionally involved in the environmental movement, I mean, writing books and heading organizations, find they can't live with the very principles they try to set down. For instance, she profiles Josh Dorfman. He's the author of the book, The Lazy Environmentalist, Your Guide to Easy, Stylish, Green Living. Now, he does everything that you might think that a man who writes a book by that title would try to do. He has a new home in Crested Butte, Colorado. He points to the renovated stairway, which is made from reclaimed barn wood. He and his wife use natural cleaning products, are constantly drinking out of their Brita pitcher so that they don't have to use bottled water. Mr. Dorfman's clothes are made from organic cotton and recycled materials. His blazer, by the way, is made from recycled soda bottles. So where's the environmental sin? Well, it's on the bottom of their baby. It turns out that they have a 5-month-old little boy, and even though they have been committed to using cloth diapers because of environmental concerns, well, the actual pressures of parenthood mean they're using disposable diapers. Quote, not only do I feel guilty, said, I feel hypocritical, but it's the most functional diapers we've found. They keep my son dry. They don't irritate his skin. They don't clump up and get really heavy. They happen to work the best, and that's annoying. End quote. Now, as you look at this story, you can grin and sometimes even grimace at seeing the folks who are profiled here, these environmentalists who put themselves on the record by publishing their books and heading their organizations, struggle to admit that they just can't quite live up to what they are claiming, the very moral principles that they set forth for themselves. One man, who's another environmentalist, it turns out has a very large yacht that he uses as a powerboat out in the ocean. Others really struggle with things that are more, well, mundane, including the process of elimination and what to do with human waste. Reading this news story, I was introduced to all kinds of alternative toilets, including, well, one that is profiled by one author of a book entitled The Humanure Handbook. Well, all of this points to the reality that we are born moral rationalizers. It's easy for all of us to look at these environmentalists with their so-called environmental sins and see that they fall short of their own moral expectations. But you know, this is a symbol of humanity. This is a picture of Genesis 3. We too know that we fall short of our moral expectations. But beyond that, we know that sin is falling short not of our own moral expectations, but of God's law and God's own righteousness. I have to admit that I found the fact that diapers become the besetting sin for so many of these environmentalists to be something, well, admittedly humorous. The story ends with going to yet another environmentalist, in this case a man by the name of Flansman, who was caught also admitting that he, against all of his own moral convictions, uses disposable diapers with his own seven-month-old. "We don't use cloth diapers," he said. "We use disposable diapers. So yes, I'm guilty about that. The first kid we had, we were boasting to my parents, well, we were going to go cloth. My parents rolled their eyes and were like, 'Call us in 6 months.' It lasted about 2 days. We never did do an impact study of water usage for cleaning versus disposable diapers. But babies use a lot of diapers." Well, the reality is the babies use a lot of diapers, and all of us fall short of our own moral expectations. Each of us desperately needs to come to an honest knowledge of our own sinfulness so we will know our need for a Savior and redemption. Maybe for environmentalists, the knowledge of so-called environmental sins is a start. And maybe for some, the reality that in this fallen world there are disposable diapers, well, maybe that's a start. The reality is that sin is a far deeper issue than the New York Times seems to understand in this story. But those of us who do know how deep a problem sin is had better be the people who speak most honestly about it. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. This is October 1, 2010. It is the 50th anniversary today of the independence of the nation of Nigeria. I am in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the 2010 Desiring God National Conference. The theme is Think, the Life of the Mind and the Love of God. On Saturday, I'll be speaking about the natural mind, meeting the natural mind in the marketplace and in the mirror. I'll look forward to meeting you again next week for The Briefing. For more information, go to albertmoeller.com. To follow me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. We would love to have you visit Southern Seminary's chapel services held weekly during the school terms on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But if you cannot visit, just go to sbts.edu and you'll see them available to you in both video and audio. That's sbts.edu. I'll meet you on Monday for The Briefing.